right, Grant Napier, Doug Christie. 1 hour left. Hope you are having a good one. And we welcome your phone calls at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. And we got a couple days off, and then you and I are going to be doing a game on TV on Thursday. I'm looking forward to that.
Shall we?
Right?
Let's do it, baby.
That's going to be fun, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Little preseason action. All right. A guy that is just a household name in the radio business. He is, I don't want to say he's in a class by himself, but as Bum Phillips once said about his fine running back, Earl Campbell, he may not be in a class by himself, but it doesn't take long to call the roll. That would be the one and only Tony Bruno. Tony, it's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you?
How you guys doing? Grant, good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a long time. Doug, I've talked to you over the years when I've been bouncing around in L.A. and Bristol, Connecticut.
Did you beat the hell out of me?
No.
Okay.
That's not my style, man. I'm not one of those guys.
Tony, I had Joe D'Ambrosio on the radio the other day, and I was telling him the story when I was flying back there to do game night during the NBA lockout in 98-99. One of the things that I'll never, ever forget is being in the work area, and you were doing NFL game day or whatever that show was during the day, and Troy Aikman goes down, and all we heard throughout the entire building, down goes Aikman! Aikman is down! That was the one and only Tony Bruno, Doug Christie.
Well, you know, I am a cowboy, but that's, you know, it's inbred. And I grew up in Philly. I'm a Philly guy, so I root for the Eagles. And the amazing thing, Grant, is that, you know, Troy Aikman and I are great friends, and many of the Cowboys guys from those teams, the dynasty teams back in the 90s, and, you know, that 90, that Super Bowl triple X in Scottsdale, Arizona, memorable game, and I got to know those guys over the years covering them. And, you know, and Troy and I have always gotten along, and he's a great, great friend.
Tony, what's the biggest difference from, let's say, when – let's take the 90s to now in the medium that we work in, sports talk radio, and for you personally, what's the big difference?
Well, I mean, obviously the access to information, Grant. I mean, back in the day, you know, when I was at ESPN in the early 90s, when that started, we didn't have – the internet was in infancy. You know, we took phone calls from listeners, but we didn't have the ability. There was no social media. There was no way for fans to get to you unless they wrote you a letter, you know, like letters to the editor back in there. We're not talking about like the 40s and 50s. And we're not a 90-year-old guy. We're talking about right. The 90s, which, you know, most of the fans listening now are alive. So
yep.
It's not like, but it's changed, obviously, because we used to go out and get all the newspapers. When we went to ESPN to do our shifts, we'd go to the local newsstand and buy like every major newspaper in America
yep.
to read about what's going on in other markets and what the columnists are saying. And, you know, but we had access to every game and everything else. Nowadays, you know, the fans, they know what's going on, and everything's on their phone. So they don't know if they need to know what the score update is. They don't run to the radio to see what's happening at the end of the first quarter, unless they're listening to the game or watching it on TV. But I'm saying if you just want peripheral information on anything nowadays, you know, the access is there. So our jobs are more as commentators and broadcasters who just have opinions, talk to the people involved, which they don't get access to. We still have the access that most fans don't have, but for the stats and the actual information that anybody can get now. So everybody sees the live post-game conferences. There's no more, what happened last night after the game? What did somebody say in the locker room? We know that now as soon as the game's over.
Yeah, good point.
Tony, with that being said, do you think that more information is better?
Oh, absolutely. I think access to information is always better. It's just that people like us in the industry where we talk about, you guys do the games and broadcast, so people know you and they listen to you, mm-hmm. and they know about your knowledge, and you dug playing in the league for 15 years. They know who you are. And obviously, Grant's been doing it a long time, and they respect him, and he's a dean in Sacramento. So you go in with that cachet as a broadcaster. But the talk show hosts are permeating the entire country all over, whether it's national or local. Those people, they're under more scrutiny now because, you know, when I went to work at ESPN, you had to know who the third line of the Vancouver Canucks was.
Right.
You didn't work
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You know, now, I'm not saying people don't know their sports. They know more sports than ever with fantasy and all the access to information. But now, you know, you can get a job. You can do a podcast, which I do now after doing radio for 40-something years. And you don't have to know everything. But if you don't know anything and you're on the air, mm-hmm. the fans will immediately call your butt out. And that's what's happening now. You know, the fans know as much as far as access to information and stats as you do. So you just can't fake it anymore.
You know, I want to talk to you because you're a Philly guy, and obviously, you know, the Eagles finally win it all. But I've always wondered, and I'm a New Yorker, and looking at Philly, I always thought of Philly as a hockey town and the Broad Street Bullies and what a phenomenal era of hockey that was. But then if you go back to basketball and the Dr. J era and with Moses Malone, and then, of course, and you know, we can talk all you want about Mo Cheeks or whatever else you want to talk about. And then people say, well, don't forget about the Phillies and what they've done. So go ahead. Tell, what is Philadelphia? Who's top dog in Philadelphia, or is it who's winning? How do you work that out, Tony?
Obviously, the Eagles finally winning, and I've been here my whole life other than my 11 years in L.A., but I was born here, raised here, and I saw the Sixers win in 67 and then 83, so I saw those great teams. I saw the worst team in 73, you know, the night in 73 76ers, so I saw the best and the worst. I mean, that 83 team to me, and the 67 team, man for man, one of the greatest rosters ever assembled. And the 83 team wasn't too shabby either. So I saw the two NBA championships. I saw the two Stanley Cups. I saw the two Phillies World Championships. But I never saw an Eagles Super Bowl until last February. So that monkey off of my back as a fan and a guy who lives here and was waiting for once to wonder whether I was going to live long enough to see the Eagles win. The Eagles are the kings in this town. And obviously the fans who just saw a Super Bowl already getting a little antsy after a couple of games, because they're not scoring a lot of points. And then, you know, they're going through what all teams do after you win a Super Bowl for the most part. And that, you know, get that little hiccup. It's not, you know, they're not the same team, not the same players, injuries. And before you know it, you know, they're 2-3 and in a division that's eminently winnable in the NFC East.
Do you think it's something to be in arms about if you are an Eagles fan, or do you think that this is kind of to be expected with Carson Wentz coming back off an injury, trying to find his way and try to find that rhythm? I thought Bennett on the defensive side was a big addition, and, you know, defensive lineman by committee last year. How do you – is it panic time or no, Tony?
No, I don't think so. I mean, anybody who suggests that – I love Nick Foles, and he was the MVP, and without him they don't win the Super Bowl, but – there are some people in this town actually saying it's time to go back to Nick Foles. Nick Foles is not mobile. And if you watch the last couple of Eagles games, and you saw the one on national TV, the problem isn't Carson Wentz's mobility. The fact that the offensive line suddenly can't block for him anymore. They can't get the running game going, and they just lost their running back for the rest of the season. And so now, you know, they're a team that has a lot of question marks. Their secondary has been torched every week. And the same guys who were making plays last year and playing over their heads, like Jalen Mills, the cornerback, you know, and the former Eagle offensive assistants who know this, just like with the Colts game where they got to see Frank Reich, who was their offensive coordinator last year. And the other day against the game they lost on Sunday, you know, their offensive coordinator was the Eagles quarterback coach last year. Mm-hmm. So they're facing guys who know exactly how Doug Peterson coaches. They know exactly what Carson Wentz is going to do, and they know what's going on that team. So teams have figured out the Eagles' offense. Doug Peterson's under the gun for some bad coaching decisions, just like Jason Garrett is. And so all of a sudden now the pressure mounts. But you would think a fan base that's never seen a Super Bowl championship would be a little easy after the first couple of games. But the fans have resorted back to the, not all of them, but the ones who just think, you know, you win a Super Bowl every year. When you finally win one, it's going to happen every year. They're the ones who are impatient, and they're the ones who are really making idiotic statements about putting Nick Foles in there instead of Carson Wentz because the offensive line can't block. If Nick Foles were out there, he'd be getting killed right now.
You know, Tony, you'd be the perfect person to ask this. Then just recently, or today actually, restructure Fletcher Cox's contract, frees up about $6.5 million in salary cap. Ajayi goes down. Any chance that Le'Veon Bell might be a target for your Eagles?
It's a possibility. I mean, they have to do something. I know Doug Peterson was talking up his port, you know, Corey Clement, who was big in the Super Bowl, and Wendell Smallwood. You can't block, unfortunately, because he's one of the reasons that Doug Peterson, that the Carson Wentz got hammered last week. He's in there. He plays his guts out. He's one of those guys who will give you everything he has. Not a superstar. But if this team wants to be in the mix and get back into the playoffs and even think about a Super Bowl, they've got to do something about their run game. And I know there were some rumors today that the Shady McCoy, the Buffalo Bills, were putting Shady McCoy up bids, but they want a second and third round pick for Shady to come back to Philadelphia. And there's no way the Eagles are going to give up a 2 and a 3 to get Shady back. He's 30 years old, still a good back. But if I'm the Eagles, I got to make a call and find out what's going on with Le'Veon Bell. I know a lot of people want what some other running backs who are out there, too, like David Johnson in Arizona, who seems to be the forgotten man there. So are those guys trade bait? Obviously, Le'Veon Bell's out there. Pittsburgh's got to do something. And it's either, to me, it's going to be Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson. And I don't know what the status is with David Johnson. I know he's under contract, at least, so they won't have to redo a deal. But the Fletcher Cox renegotiation, Doug, no doubt about it. That's not just for figuring out what's going on at the running back situation, but also they got to take care of Carson Wentz in the future, too.
Tony Bruno joining us here on Sports 1140. Tony, how long, give me a number of years, ballpark figure, since the fans in Philadelphia have been this excited about the start of an NBA season?
Wow. Well, obviously they were last year because the Joel Embiid injury thing finally disappeared, you know, but then the Ben Simmons thing disappeared. The Eagles have the Sixers have an amazing process. It's almost like everybody that they draft gets a red shirt freshman year. They don't have to play their first year.
Right.
You know,
right.
The kid they took this year after the trade.
I know.
Zaire Smith. Yeah, you know, he's now not going to play until Christmas, they say, and hopefully he'll be around for Christmas. But, you know, you go to Ben Simmons, you go to Joel Embiid, they waited 3 years for him. You know, you go to last year.
Markel Fultz,
And Fultz is now shooting well. So, I mean, people were like, this guy can't shoot. What the heck happened to him? So, Fultz is playing. He looked good in the summer league. He looked good in some preseason. So, they're going to have Fultz back, and obviously the big three are going to be, without question, Joel Embiid, who's still a monster. And then, of course, you got Ben Simmons, who is phenomenal. And he's starting to shoot a little bit, which is nice. Isn't it amazing, though, that we're talking about in this day and age, Duncan? It's got to really hit home with you.
Yeah.
There's number one draft picks, guys who are now among the elite players in the NBA who still don't know how to shoot the basketball.
Wow. It's something else. And you know what? Let's pair that with the fact that you got one of the best shooters in the NBA, J.J. Redick. I'm just saying, how about you ask him a question and maybe get a couple shooting drills, Tony, and stay after practice and work on your shot, for God's sake.
Hey, Tony, you know what? Honestly, what you just said, I've been talking about this. It is, to me, of all the sports that we cover, I think that the fact that you can get a young phenom, a one and done, won a national championship, whatever the case may be, and they come into your gym and they can't shoot. I don't get it. I don't understand how that can possibly happen. But you know what? It's more the norm than the exception.
Yeah, and the amazing thing about Ben Simmons, and you do know that, you know, this guy's better than I do, the guy is still one of the best young players
absolutely
in the league.
Right,
and,
yes.
And everybody knows he's going to go to the hole. Everybody knows he's going to dish. And he still gets his...
It's unbelievable.
He gets his minutes, he gets his points, he gets the ball distributed. And he's an unbelievable young player. So imagine if he develops a mid-range jumper, how deadly he could be. And Fultz, I think it was physical. I think they just didn't want that to get out last year, that he was having some sort of a problem with his shoulder. They didn't want to be stuck, you know, because the PR department has a tough time explaining every year that the guy we just took was one of the top three picks to be able to play for us this year, you know. So Fultz is playing, and Ben Simmons is back, and Joel Embiid, just like with Carson Wentz, worry about the first couple of games back, and, you know, is he going to be able to run? And so when he fell the first time, everybody got crazy.
Well, Tony, great catching up with you, man. Great hearing your voice, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Tony.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
All good stuff right there, Tony Bruno. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. We'll be right back. We get to Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Grant. First off, I've got a lot of respect for what you do. I'm a huge Kings fan. I love watching you commentate. But having said that, I just think some of your comments, you're getting a little out of line, especially with OBJ. I just don't think you can say that he's never going to win the championship with the Giants.
No, I don't think he's not going to win a championship. I don't think he's even going to win a playoff game or playoff games, plural. I don't think he is a team enough guy to get that done. I think he's a divisive drama queen who's unbelievably talented but can't keep his mouth shut. That's what I think he is.
I completely agree with you. I just don't think – so I recall like a year or two ago I was listening to you and you said that DeMarcus Cousins was never going to win an NBA championship. And look at what position he is in now.
Well, can I say something to you? I don't know anything about you. I don't know how old you are. I don't know about your athletic ability. If they had signed you instead of DeMarcus Cousins, they would have the same chance of winning a championship. So let's not like, you know, stop it with this. DeMarcus Cousins is going to win a championship. I mean, again, if they had signed you instead of him, they would have the same chances. So stop it with that nonsense, please.
I'm sorry. My point is that things change. The situations can change around the Giants. The Giants can become a really good team, and OBJ might not necessarily have to bring too much to the table to win.
Well, I hope you're right. But he as of to this point, I can only go by what I've seen. He does not seem to have the ability to prevent distractions from coming to the team that he plays on. And that's the one constant that he has done. And it was the one constant that DeMarcus Cousins had when he played here. He cannot help himself. And he's constantly bringing distractions to the team that he plays for. And even though it's different than Odell and the type of distractions, it has the same effect, in my opinion. And the effect is it becomes very, very difficult to win when you have those type of distractions going around all the time. Because the thing, and I always say this, Alex, and whether you agree or disagree, that's fine. The term I always use is what's next, because with DeMarcus, there's always a what's next. With Odell Beckham, through his career, there's always been a what's next. And so we just saw what happened on Sunday with his interview that he did on ESPN. And now I have to ask, okay, what's coming next for him that's going to be divisive? What's going to come next that's going to be a distraction for the team? Because I know there's going to be a what's next. I just don't know what it's going to be. You there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I can see that opinion.
All right. Well, you have a good night. Thanks for calling the show.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. So I guess I'm not that outrageous with my comments.
Depends.
I want a team first guy. Call me old fashioned, call whatever you want. I don't care if you're into flamboyancy and all of that, if you're a team first guy. And if your actions become a distraction for your team, then in my opinion, you're not being a team first guy.
So let me understand this, and I think that people, so they don't misunderstand it, because that's what sounds like goes on. You don't mind his personality if it was equating to wins, and if him catching 7 balls or 17 balls or 3 balls, there was no difference in what he had to say, like crying, upset, and all those different things. As long as I'm the best player, and I don't mind being not a distraction, where the defense is focused on me so someone else can catch the football.
A decoy.
Decoy. Right. I don't mind being that because it's helping us win.
Right.
If that was more his attitude.
But that's not his attitude.
I understand.
I have a problem with that.
I understand that.
Okay. And I also understand his frustration. I get that part of it.
Yeah.
I get that because he is unbelievably talented. And, you know, to me, when you go out on national TV and you basically throw your coach under the bus, which you did, and you saw Pat Shurmur's comments after the game.
Yes.
He wasn't having any of that.
No, he was not.
Okay.
And he nipped it in the bud.
And when you basically undermine a quarterback that's had 2 Super Bowl MVPs, who is the heart and soul of the New York Giants, okay, who still can play at a pretty good level.
He showed that this week.
Right. I mean, What are you trying to accomplish by making those type of comments? That's what I would, if Odell was sitting here, I would go, what are you trying to accomplish with those type of comments?
And I think that he tried to say as much, and this is my thing, and I don't know if it works for him. He's trying to learn how to be a leader, and sometimes you make mistakes. What he's going to have to demonstrate, I think, to you and most New York Giants fans is the consistency of progression and taking away from the quote-unquote diva attitude start producing some wins.
I don't want to see Odell Beckham be the leader. The Giants don't need Odell Beckham to be a leader.
Okay.
They don't need that. They just need him to be the best receiver in football. He doesn't have to be a leader. Just go out and do your job. We'll be right back. More of your phone calls next. All right, let's get to some phone calls, 339-1140, and we get to Brandon. Hello, Brandon. How are you?
Hey, Grant. I hope you guys' day is going great. I first off wanted to just ask a quick question, and then if we had some time, share my expectations for the Kings this year. But first off, I've enjoyed hearing about everybody's different expectations. And like you said, they're not based on numbers. And I guess my only worry would be that Vlade and Dave Nagar's expectations are sort of related to numbers. Do you guys get the sense that the Kings organization is sort of has some sort of benchmark number for their two futures with the Kings?
I wouldn't say that. I don't know the answer to that question, and I don't want to speak for Dave Yeager or Vlade Divac, so I don't know if they have a number that they feel is obtainable and that's, you know, agreed upon between the coach and the front office. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. I would just hate to see us see a lot of progress in some of the areas that we have identified that don't necessarily reflect the numbers. And see those two guys who have built a lot of great stuff leave.
I'll answer the question this way. I believe that everyone in the Kings organization will know in April, regardless of what the first number is in the win total, they'll know whether this team is on the right track and close to being a playoff team.
That's
what I believe.
Awesome. That's good. And that's what I hope as a Kings fan. But moving forward, I would say, if I could say three things that I would really love to see is, first off, sort of grit. I like having a defensively minded team, sort of like Doug was saying.
Yep.
So this is a unit that can be gritty and just sort of have the energy that Garrett Temple and Iman Shumpert have the ability of bringing. You know, I know Garrett's gone, but he had that sort of edge on him. If we could have multiple guys that had that and feed off of each other, that'd be fantastic. Second, I would say, as a previous caller mentioned, just sort of playing together as a unit. And then third, if we could have some sort of momentum in drawing some sort of free agent. I end up don't know exactly if we're going to have that, but if our performance could have drawn the eye of a few good free agents.
Well, I think that's good. And now the Kings are set up very, very well financially for that free agent next summer. And so will they get the top-tier free agent, like possibly a Kawhi Leonard or that? No, they won't. But I think they can get a good player here. I really do.
Absolutely. And I think that would be the one thing I would love to see. But anyways, thanks, guys.
Thank you. And again, they may have to overpay for that particular individual to lure him here. But, you know, again, I think they probably did that with Zach LaVine. They really like Zach, and they gave him a heck of an offer, but Chicago matched it within 5 minutes.
Yes. And sometimes that is what is going to have to happen. Now, I know that some people said, oh, well, you got De'Aaron Fox, you got different players, and when they're up, they're going to want to leave. I don't necessarily buy into that that narrative. I think that with everything that's going on in Sacramento, a lot of different things, you can go visit Los Angeles, you can visit New York. This is a really interesting place when it comes to the fan support and everything that's going on.
All right, let's move along to Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Dean.
It's awesome, Grant. So I just curious. I think just want to disagree with where you stand on your idea, if not theology, about DeMarcus Cousins. I think he's an all-star. He has a great character. He holds himself.
Well, he doesn't have a great character on the court. So let's just cut. Cut to the. He has good character off the court. On the court, he doesn't have good character.
I would defer to disagree.
Then you can look at all the times he's been fined, all the times he's been suspended, all the times that he's cursed at fans, all right, if that's how you define good character on the floor, then he has good character on the floor. Let me finish. If you think that it's good character cursing out all your coaches, then you're right. You're right and I'm wrong. He has very good character on the floor. You're right. Anything else? No, I guess not. All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. 339-1140, 800. What? I asked him. He didn't want to come back. I gave him plenty of time.
Great. Kings coach Bob Thornton and his wife Kim are doing something incredible, and I'm going to be helping them out. Canines for Companion Independence. Canines for Companions for Independence is a nonprofit organization. Grant, I know you know about this. You had them on the Golf Hour, that helps provide highly trained service dogs to individuals with disabilities at no cost to the recipient. it costs from birth to service for Canine Companions for Independence, $50,000 to get a dog up to speed. They need your help this Monday, October 15th at Granite Bay Golf Club. They will be playing. I will be out there, so you can go to cciGolf.org if you want to play with me. It's a fantastic day, and it's going to accomplish some great things.
Yeah,
so hope to see you out there.
Yeah, I had the one of the tournament organizers on my show. Our show, but you were off that day, and so
sorry about that.
That's okay. You know, you were entitled to have some days off, and we did talk about it. So it seems like a great event.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, get to golf. Hopefully, I can find my swing by then. Goodness gracious,
is that right?
Yeah, man, it left me.
Towards or off?
Yeah, man, I don't know
what happened.
Man,
it happens. Don't worry about it.
It happens.
It happens all the time.
Well, don't be standing to the right.
Look at all the pro golfers. You know, they play well, and then the next week they miss the cut.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That's their living, and they do that. Wait a minute. A guy, like, they shoot, all of a sudden they go from shooting a 65 to a 75.
It's like, dude.
You know?
Well, me, it's I don't like that, Grant.
I know,
I'm too competitive. It just makes me upset, man. I didn't break anything, though.
Want to let everyone know that if you call right now at 339-1140 or 800-920-1140, we got Sacramento Kings opening night tickets. To see the Kings take on the Jazz. The Kings, of course, October 17th, get it started. You can get more information at KHTK.com. All KHTK giveaways are powered by RosevilleAutoMall.com. And again, you can call right now, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. It's still 4-0. The ball game is in the fifth. Amazing efficiency for Rick Porcello tonight. He's only thrown 48 pitches in the game, and the game is in the bottom of the fifth inning.
I mean,
so he's been very efficient.
Yeah, he has. I mean, actually, we were looking at some pitches from earlier innings and everything, kind of a little curve on it, grounders.
You know what he's
consistently
doing? Every batter, he's starting off with a strike, so he's not getting behind. So he's pitching ahead of the count, which means he's got the advantage.
Right.
And he's done a nice job of that so far.
Well, good for him, bad for you.
Well, the game's not over yet.
Yeah, no, it is not.
It's the bottom of the fifth.
And one of your favorite players, Mr. Gary Sanchez, just hit a ground rule double.
It was, he can't catch, but boy, can he hit.
Did that jersey ever come to you? I know you ordered it the other day when I was texting you.
Not yet. It's in the mail.
It's in the mail?
Yeah. Okay. I got number 24 coming right to my front steps.
Hey, hopefully you can catch it. See how I did that?
Oh, my gosh. You're a beauty.
Hey, man.
NBA, again, we talk about tomorrow. Lonzo Ball is going to play for the Lakers
for
the first time in the preseason. So a lot of people will be watching that. And then, of course, the season actually begins next Tuesday with a pair of games. And the Kings will play on Wednesday. But when you look at the schedule already for a week from tonight, the NBA season opens with Philadelphia is at Boston and Oklahoma City is at Golden State.
You know, Oklahoma City, as over here on NBA TV on the other channel, we're watching them preseason play the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yep.
No Russell Westbrook, who had the arthroscopy on his knee.
Yep.
You know, where does that take them? What does that do for them?
I thought getting Dennis Schroeder was a great move for them, Doug.
And if there's any other player in the NBA that probably plays at the type of speed besides our De'Aaron Fox, Schroeder does push the ball up and down the floor. And now with Westbrook injured, it's going to be big for him to come out. And a lot is going to be put on Paul George's shoulders.
There's no question. And, you know, you got Steven Adams in the middle. And again, you talk about them. George, Adams, and Schroeder aren't playing anymore in the preseason. They've already said they're not playing anymore. So they're, you know, again, we're talking about a team that cannot afford another injury right now as they get ready to take on the Golden State Warriors. You're exactly right.
Yes. And, you know, a big, big loss for them was Andre Roberson.
Huge.
And, you know, Grant, I don't know. They said a suture was irritating
him.
I didn't really understand that. And when the timetable is what threw me off. They said he'll be reevaluated
in two or 3 months. I didn't understand
goodness
that either.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, there's got to be something more than that.
Yeah, you know? he must be in some serious pain, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to have the final segment next right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Grant Napier and Doug Christie. Final segment, 339-1140. 800-920-1140. We get to Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Grant. How you doing?
I'm good, Jeff. What are you up to?
I'm good. I just was watching that Saints game last night and just thinking about you know, how good Drew Brees has been for the majority of his career.
No doubt.
Get your thoughts on you know, where you'd rank him all time, because I was kind of thought about it and couldn't really place him anywhere. You know, not an exact number, but do you put him top five?
No way I'm putting him top five. I'm not putting him top 10, but he would probably be 11 or 12 on my list. And the other part is he's not done playing yet, so he may very well go top 10. Personally, he's not my top 10, but he's pretty close to it. He's clearly going to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So I can easily name guys that I would put ahead of him, but he's definitely one of the best. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, that's it. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you very much. And, you know, here's the other deal. I'm not taking anything away from Drew Brees because he's a tremendous quarterback. He also has played in an era, particularly the last 5 or 7 years, where it has been a passing league with very the rules have been simplified to allow quarterbacks to really excel.
Yeah, and if he continues to play the way that he's playing right now for 3 more years, he could probably set the bar, Grant,
absolutely,
where it's probably unattainable. Not to mention, give him credit. I mean, he's one touchdown away from 500 at the same time, and that's a light list as well.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, if you want to call the show before we adjourn, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And the other aspect of talking about ranking quarterbacks, to me, and I didn't see him play, but Otto Graham is considered by every football historian is one of the great quarterbacks of all time. Mm-hmm. So just that alone, he's on my list, you know, and yet people don't think about him. Johnny Unitas is on my list, and I watched Johnny Unitas play. Johnny Unitas was great, yet if I ask that individual, just based on his age, and I'm not being anything other than accurate, he probably doesn't know who Johnny Unitas is. And that's, listen, I get that. He wasn't here. A lot of people don't, like, if I asked my son to talk to me about Otto Graham, he wouldn't be able to do it. My son is a NFL football junkie. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Now, when you look at a guy like Johnny Unitas, who would you compare him to today?
Oh, boy.
To give a little mobile, has an arm, sit in the pocket.
He wasn't that mobile, but what he was first of all just tough as nails. He was such an incredible competitor.
Okay.
You know, he was just such a competitor. You know, you almost felt like every time you took the field, Johnny Unitas was going to win.
Right.
You know, he had that you would have loved Johnny Unitas. Like, you would have absolutely loved Johnny Unitas.
I got one for you because I grew up watching this guy. Where do you put Terry Bradshaw in the pantheon of quarterbacks?
Terry Bradshaw was to me a tremendous, tremendous quarterback. And people say, well, you know, he had the best defensive football. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But when you look at his numbers, and particularly 2 of the 4 Super Bowl runs, his numbers were incredible.
Yeah.
Great. No doubt about it. Terry Bradshaw was great for the Steelers. People say, well, gee, you know, he had Rocky Blyer and he had Franco.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? He had Franco Harris. Yeah, okay, he was good. Well, you know what? There were years where Terry Bradshaw – people, well, Grant, you know, he had John Stallworth, he had Lynn Swann. I get all of that, Lynn Swann. You still got to make the plays. You still, you know, you can't say that, well, Joe Montana had Jerry Rice and John Taylor, and you can't. Well, you still got to go out and make the plays.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you can. That's why you got with Clark in the catch. It had to happen. Now, the ball had to be thrown, but somebody has to catch it on the other end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love watching Johnny Unitas play. And again, I was fortunate enough to watch Johnny Unitas play for many games in person.
Wow.
You know, at the old Shea Stadium in particular, because they were in the same division as the Jets. And so, yeah, I used to love watching Johnny Unitas play. And, you know, again, we're talking about not a good quarterback, a great, great quarterback. Great quarterback.
That would be a – because it's obviously – subjective, you know, it depends on how you look at it, but to list some and see, because you're right, when you look at like a Drew Brees and different guys, it's a different era, so it's pumped up. That
right.
doesn't take anything away from Drew, because he
no.
is, listen, and what is, you know what's really big time about him is San Diego wrote him off. He was done. Shoulder.
Yep.
It's a wrap.
Yep.
He goes and
that's
Peyton believes in him.
Good point.
And man, oh man, they love that man down in New Orleans.
You know, Roger Staubach to me is top 10 all time. You know, Johnny Unitas, Otto Graham, top 10 all time. John Elway, Dan Marino, top 10 all time. Peyton Manning, top 10 all time. You know, I mean, and no disrespect to Drew Brees. He's one of the greats. I just don't know if I can put him in my top 10.
I got you. You got Favre in there?
You know,
he's a tough dude.
I'm going to tell you why I don't have Brett Favre in my top 10. Is because Brett Favre had a lot of bad games and big games. And a lot of he made some plays in big games that to me are inexplicable. The play, Minnesota, the interception yeah. thrown across his body, the interception against the Giants in the NFC Championship game, which Corey Webster picked off, just a horrible throw. And I can't forget about those things. And I just can't make believe that those things did not happen. So, he's probably not. I know he is on just about everybody's list. He's probably not on my list.
Yeah, I got you.
He could be, but I don't have my list in front of me. Right. I'm just doing this off the top of my head.
Yeah, got Joe Montana on there?
Clearly.
Okay.
Tom Brady's on there. Okay. Even though he's currently playing still.
If you had to pick between Jim Zorn and Russell Wilson.
I love Jim Zorn, the left-hander. Steve Largent, maybe the best passing combination of that era.
Yeah,
I love that combination. Yeah. I mean, I used to love watching Jim Zorn play. Jim Zorn was someone that even, and I watched Jim Zorn in person. He and Steve Largent were unstoppable.
Yeah, great combination, man.
They were unstoppable.
Yeah, and
number 10.
Largent is, he was a tactician, man.
Number 10 to number 80.
No doubt. 80. I got a jersey. It's someplace
If I was from Seattle, I would have had I would have had both jerseys. I would have had 10 on the back and 80 on the front. That was, you talk about that era and Jim Zorn and Steve Largent. That was as good as there was.
Yeah, for my Seahawks. That's what we were rolling with.
All right. We are going to be back tomorrow. Make it a great evening, everybody. And always good to have you aboard for Doug Christie, Grant Napier. So long. We'll be right back.